Hello, good evening, Rabbi Mayevsky. I just wanted to start off by saying, first of all, I'm home. I'm still like 5 o'clock in the morning for me. But I entitled the shiur tonight, Do You See the Light? And what I mean by that is very simple. I grew up on the Lower East Side and seeing Rabbi Moshe Feinstein every day in shul and during the day, and his face always shone. They had a certain, I don't know, he always looked to me like he was just under a sun lamp. And I had another Rebbe like that, Rabbi Alpert, but I always mentioned it to my father as a child that their face had a certain glow about it. And I often wonder in the parasha this week, we have that Moshe's face and came down from Har Sinai, and his face had a certain glow to it, not a normal glow, obviously. But the fact is, he had to wear a mask. But the point is, what was very strange about it was, it says when he spoke to the people, he took the mask off. He only put the mask back on when he wasn't in anybody's presence. And the question might be asked, certainly, you would think maybe it should be just the other way around, because what a rabbi is supposed to do as his job is to be accessible. And that's what Moshe was supposed to be, to make everybody feel comfortable with him so that they wouldn't be afraid. If a rabbi is unapproachable, what good is it? And people are afraid to ask him questions, and you want to be accessible and for everybody to feel comfortable. But what God wanted at this point in time was for people to see and get the impression that this was somebody not just approachable, but somebody who had God's presence with him, obviously by that glow that he had about him, to see. And when he came down from Har Sinai, that's what the people saw, and God wanted them to experience that. And that's why he had that immense glow about him. And when the glow was unnecessary, when nobody was around, that's when he put the mask back on. But everything is a growth experience. So what I wanted to say was that Moshe, we see one thing at the end. We've discussed the Mishkan ad infinitum. But the interesting thing is that we see very different in this parsha is that previous to this parsha, when the Mishkan is being put together, we don't see in particular, it says that everything was done according to specs. But nevertheless, in this parsha, we see every couple of sentences when he goes around to inspect each item that was produced for the Mishkan, it says, each item separately, kasher tzivu Hashem es Moshe, everything was done in order, everything was done properly. And what he means by that, the reason he's making this point at this point in time, is very interesting, because he realizes that up to this point, there's been a lot of criticism for so many things that have happened. And what I mean by that is that when he came down from the mountain with the Luchos, and all he sees is the music and the Egel, they're dancing around it. Not only that, as Chazal tell us, that what Moshe saw, that Aaron was the one who was, so to speak, leading the band, banging the drums, and that sort of set him ablaze in his mind. And of course, Aaron was trying to tell him, what could I do? But Moshe didn't accept it. But God said to Moshe Rabbeinu, I know what was on his mind. You don't. And I could tell you what he was thinking. And he took one for the team. But what he really was doing was, God understood one thing that was very important, which was that if he would be the one to make God, excuse me, Aaron went ahead and told B'nai Israel, I am going to build the eagle, not you. And God, he understood one thing, that if the Jews would build the golden calf, then they would face immediate destruction, because their modus operandi for building the golden calf would be for Avodah Zarah, for actual idol worship. But if Aaron were doing it, he was doing it just for a joke, and they would understand that, but it wouldn't have the kavana. He didn't have the intention for building it. And that's why he was doing it that way. And that's why he says, Kasher Tzi, excuse me, so when Moshe came down, God was trying to express that to him. God was trying to tell him that, tell Moshe Rabbeinu to ease off on Aaron himself. And that's why it says also that Moshe, God told Moshe, that's why I told him, I told Aaron to light the menorah. I'm giving him the job. I thought to Tavez B'nai Israel, he's getting that job to prove that I know what he was doing. But nevertheless, you see one thing. When it says, Lech Reid Kish Yifei Samachah, God is telling Moshe Rabbeinu, not to go down and straighten things out, but he was saying, what are you doing up here? You stayed here. Moshe Rabbeinu felt inclined to stay with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The experience was so overwhelming to him, he didn't want to leave. Har Sinai, just being with God for those 40 days was unbelievable experience for him, and he wanted to continue to be there. But God said, Lech Reid, your people need you. Go down there. You don't know what's happening. They can't be without you. And Moshe comes down a changed person and realizes that. But when he sees, even after God, he is placated God. God says to him, you know, go down. And then he first breaks the luchos, and God says, now you see how it feels. They're not trying to replace me, but they're trying to replace you as an intermediary. And that's when Moshe breaks the luchos. But after that experience, he changes. But getting back to the putting up of the Mishkan now, Moshe realizes that Klal Yisrael need a new type of leadership. And when he goes around, and instead of telling everybody in one massive group that the Mishkan was done properly, he goes around to each group of people. There were separate groups of artisans who were making various parts, the things that needed gold, the silver, the copper, all the different craftsmen who needed the artwork for the Oros HaLim, the Oros HaShim, Vasei Shitim, all of these things that were necessary. Each individual group, he wanted to give them. He wanted to give them their thanks for doing everything separately and tell them that it's a job well done. And that is a lesson to all of us. He understood that people need a pat on the back when they do things, and that's a very important factor. But he also sees the future, Moshe Rabbeinu. And when he comes down and he sees all of this and everything is being done for the months that it took them to do all of this, it says when Moshe Rabbeinu finally went, and he did it according to spec. At this point in time, it's not only what does Kasher Tivo Hashem as Moshe mean. It doesn't only mean that they made everything according to spec. But when Moshe assembled the Mishkan, we noticed the order of things that were commanded in Truma Tetzaveh. There was an order of things that had to be made in a certain particular order. But when it came time to place the things in the Mishkan, to place things in the home of God, it was only then that God told him, this is how I want you to put things together, and this is a separate order. And that's why it has to say, Kasher Tivo Hashem Es Moshe, which each individual group, he had to put it in a particular order. The Aron and the Shulchan and the various things that come along in a certain particular order, and when everything was put in its proper order, then it got, literally speaking, it got its COO, its certificate of occupancy, and it says Vayachas Ha'anon Eso Ohel. And then God's presence came down. Previous to that, Moshe was able to come and go from the Ohel Moed without God's interference. But now, when everything was ready for occupancy, now God's presence came and rested upon Vayechas Ha'anon Es Ohel, and God's presence said, now I'm moving in, so to speak. Literally speaking, not so to speak, but his presence came down, and his home had been completed, and now he literally moved in. At that point in time, Moshe was unable to enter the Ohel. And when we see in next week's parsha, when it says Vayikra El Moshe Me'ol Moed Lemar, the order of what is happening in that place is previous to this. It took place before the end of this parsha, because previous to Hashem's, so to speak, occupancy of the Ohel Moed, Moshe was able to come and go, but now he could only go when God's presence wasn't there. But when I said see the light, the point is that what is the Onon and what is the Choshech? And what I mean by that is the Onon and the Esh were always there simultaneously. They were always there. But during the day, when light is not visible because of the sunlight, you see the cloud. And the fire is in the clouds, and that's with God's presence, so to speak, was in the cloud itself. But at night, when the fire is more visible, it shines through the cloud, and that's when God's presence was more noticeable. And they only traveled when the cloud moved, but that cloud was always there, and the fire was always there. And this was the cover. Of course, there's different types of usage of the word kavod, God's presence. It says, Ki anan Hashem al mishkan yomon v'eshti alayla bo. They were always there at the same time, but at different points in time, depending on the weather, they were more visible. And when that's what it says, u'v'heol so ye so. And when the cloud lifted and moved, this was not an ordinary cloud as we look in the sky and we see our clouds on a daily basis. This is not the same type of a cloud, obviously, because this was God's presence in the cloud. But getting away from this parasha now, we see that sometimes we see the light, and that's the part of this parasha is Moses' face shone, and they saw, they felt God's presence. Some people have that ability to be leaders of a sort and have that ability to make certain decisions, and that's why what I wanted to say in terms of Purim is very striking, because many of the Chazal will tell you, and of course the people of the time in the time of the Megillah in reference to Purim will tell you, and that's why the pasuk at the end of the Megillah, it says that most of the people really were in favor. His popularity was more than 50%, and you would think that since Mordechai saved all of Klal Yisrael, that everybody would be in favor of Mordechai. But the reality was, there were so many people that were against him because he put his life on the line, and they felt since he stood up by not bowing down to Haman, and he stood out and caused Haman's anger, and Haman was always so angry with Mordechai, was why he, one of the reasons that he chose to try to annihilate the Jews, and they blamed Mordechai for it. But Mordechai was that man that the Gemara even expresses, what gives Mordechai the right to be that type of person, and a great leader that he was. Mordechai understands, Mordechai was always a person that saw the light, and who led him to be that kind of a person to see the light? There were people who preceded Mordechai, and we see Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, who they saw the light as well. They asked Yecheskel that time, how could we bow down, and what will happen if we do? Yeah, of course, we know that God sent Yecheskel on a mission that he wouldn't be around to help Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, that they would survive, and nevertheless, so, and anyhow, that they would survive, because that would be going against the grain. Why should they give up their life if they know they're going to jump in the furnace? Daniel is the same thing, and he was the main casualty of Purim. We always get around that. Daniel was killed at the end of the story of Purim. Daniel is the one who is the one sacrificial lamb in the story, but nevertheless, Mordechai understands that it takes the leader of a generation to be that type of a person to see the light. He understands that God is looking for even one great person who's willing to stand up for God. I always remember when, I don't know if I've mentioned it before, but certain events in my life always stand out. And my mother once called me to work in the morning, and I used to be at work between 5 and 6 o'clock in the morning, and we were davening at work when I got around to it. And then one time it was sort of already after 9 o'clock in the morning, I hadn't davened. My mother asked me to do something. She called me on the phone, and I said, I'm sorry, but I have no time. I didn't even daven yet. And she said, yes, she understands. And a couple of days later, she called me back jokingly and said, well, it wasn't such a joke, because she had that biting sense of humor. And she said to me, I spoke to God, and he said he understands that you didn't daven. You know, sometimes you daven very late, and he understands you have a lot of things to do, but he just requested one thing. He said, when I spoke to him, he said, please, once in a while, at least make me first. And of course, I laughed, but I got the message. And Mordechai always understood that. Moshe understood that. Mordechai understood that. Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, and Daniel, the greats of their generation, always are the ones to understand that God still comes first. And that's what Mordechai did. He understood that sometimes it takes one man's action to change the course of history. One man, that God stands up in a generation. It took one man, Noah, to save the entire world. If not for Noah, the entire world would have been destroyed. For Avraham Avinu, so much more of the lands would have been destroyed. There's certain great people who stand up in the face of great tzaris, in the face of great tragedy. And Mordechai felt that responsibility. When we see it in the Pesukim, when it says, U Mordechai, it says, Ben Yoir, Ben Shemi, Ben Kish, Ishimini, there's one name left out in the sequence of the generations there. It skips the name of Sheol, because Sheol was the one responsible for Haman for being there at that time. And so out of, you know, we just don't want to keep his name, but Mordechai was there. He understood the necessity, being from the same Shevet as Sheol. He felt the responsibility to rectify the misdeed of Sheol, his ancestor, and to step forward and stick his neck out, literally. And the Gemara asks, what gave Mordechai the right to do that? Who said he should have done it? But the fact is, the Gemara comes to the conclusion that it takes only the greats of a generation have the right to do something like that, to put their neck on the line, so to speak, because he didn't have to stick his neck out like that. It's never the right. It doesn't appear to be that somebody has the right for Avraham to jump in the Kivshon Ha'esh, to jump in the fire, to let himself be thrown into the fire. He could have stayed on the sidelines and not stuck his neck out. And the Gemara asked that, and that's why the Chumash doesn't tell us the story of Avraham jumping in, being thrown into the Kivshon Ha'esh, because he put his life on the line needlessly. And generally speaking, we are told never to do that, but the greats of a generation have the right to do that because they're in the public eye, and it sets the stage. And that was Mordechai's idea. That was Mordechai's intention. And because of the schus and the merit of Mordechai, literally putting his life on the line for Esther, putting their life on the line, they were able to save. And sometimes we look in the news and we look at certain people who say, we wonder why they do something. It causes a level of anti-Semitism. Why do they just make a scene about certain things? And sometimes we have to realize that it's because of them putting their neck out in praise of God to save. Say that I am a Jew, and that comes first, and that's why we survive. And sometimes we have to realize that. It's a very important fact that Mordechai stood up to the test of time, and it says that's why we survive. And even Mordechai himself didn't want to write this Megillah the way we have it. It was Esther who forced the issue, which is why we call it Megillah's Esther. It was only through her auspices, her forcing Mordechai and the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah of the time to write the Megillah. They said, Achashverosh, if we make them look too bad, he was still, don't forget, what we have to come to the realization was, when it says, who Achashverosh, the same Achashverosh who was willing to kill all the Jews at the beginning of the Megillah, was the same Achashverosh at the end of the Megillah. He did not become a person who loved the Jews after this. What he realized was all his efforts were in vain. All the money that he spent on these great parties and things were all for naught, and that he was still married to a Jewish woman didn't make him a happy camper at this point in time in his life. And he hated Jews just as much before, but his hands were tied, and he realized the popularity of the day. But he also realized that Mordechai was the only one who had saved his life previously, and he didn't know what else to do about it. But who Achashverosh, and only Mordechai himself was able to do that. We have to take a look at certain people and reevaluate our thoughts when we see somebody who gets his name in the paper for sticking out for Jewish causes. And sometimes we think it would be better off keeping a lower profile. Maybe they wouldn't bring it out to the press. But the reality is, these are the reasons we do survive. For these people, for the types of Mordechai, for Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, and for Daniel, especially Daniel Ishchamudos, who, if we take a look at the Megillah, there is a preamble to the Megillah, is the life of Daniel, who set the stage for Mordechai being using Daniel as an example for his own types of actions in his life, using them as a role model, using Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah for a role model for himself. And we look for those role models like Reb Moshe Feinstein and various other people who we look for today. May they rise up and fill the void that we see in our lives today. It's a very difficult situation. We don't seem to have that one leader who we focus on and look to for that inspiration, for that guidance. May that person step forward in our life. Thank you, and have a good evening. I think I'm falling asleep. Have a good night.